Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
5 o'clock hours here. We were just talking a little baseball with Chuck Esposito over at STN. We'll continue with some baseball news and notes in about 25 minutes. We're going to talk some Chiefs, but also have to get in a little Royals talk because, you know, there is that time coming when we will have the A's. And if the Royals are winning, then the A's better be winning. Right? We've already set this up. Like, we don't want to hear about budget. Because if the Royals and Twins can win consistently, then little old, and we're not little, Vegas can win as well. The voice of baseball in Vegas is Matt Neverett. And Matt joined us here on this Thursday. And I wanted him on a little early because the Aviators have what is one of the coolest promotional weekends going. Matt Neverett, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Cofield Company, how are you guys?
We are good. They are good. Griffin is good. Tonight, good feature. And are we going to have Wolfpack and Rebel fans intermingling? Is that the hope? Are we trying to bring them together, or do we have separate party areas on college night?
Maybe a little bit of both. I don't know if that proverbial olive branch has been extended yet. I know the original plan was to have kind of competing party decks on each end with UNLV down the first base side and the Wolfpack down the line at third. But, you know, neither here nor there. I was told that one person booked for the Wolfpack side, so they ended up moving them to a regular seat, and UNLV is going to take over on that side as well. So a lot of scarlet. We'll see some Navy tonight. Josh Pastner throwing out the first pitch. We'll have him on our broadcast tonight. Pretty early on in the game. Also, if you bought your tickets through a very specific link on the website, there's beach towels, one with a UNLV logo, one with a UNR logo. So, yeah, they're leaning real heavy into the college theme.
Damn. Plenty of Reno beach towels available, apparently. $2 beer night as well. That's every Thursday, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, doing it like a tailgate party down the third base side in the plaza. If you know DJ E-Rock, he's one of the best in all of Las Vegas, a pretty DJ-heavy city, and he's, I think, one of the best that I've seen at these live events, and he has almost become the unofficial DJ of Las Vegas ballpark. So he'll be down the third base side in the plaza. He's actually just starting right now, 5 o'clock. If you're driving around, want to come see some cool DJing and a tailgate-like party, he'll be doing that down the plaza on the third base side. And the pitching matchup tonight, I think, is the real story. Luis Morales, who got called up last week in Sugarland, made his AAA debut by going 6 hitless innings while striking out 7. He was named Pitcher of the Week in the PCL, and he'll make his Las Vegas ballpark debut against Bobby Miller, you know, former number one pitching prospect of the Dodgers, and kind of toggling back and forth between AAA and the big club. So, you know, great night from a promotion standpoint, but I think the pitching matchup is the real storyline.
Nice. LV Ballpark, get your tickets now for the Aviators games tomorrow night. Another cool giveaway with the Sunglass Night.
Yeah, first 2,000 fans through the gates get a pair of Aviators sunglasses just in time for summer, presented by AutoNation on that one. And then typically on Friday, we'll have the fireworks show. No different tomorrow night. Should be a good one on Friday night as well. First place Aviators going up against the second place Oklahoma City Comets. So at the very least, you're getting some thrilling playoff race baseball, including tonight. There's only 23 games left in the first half. Whoever's got the best record in the 10-team PCL on June 23rd is going to host the best of three championship series at the end of September.
Let's talk about the roster and maybe some potential infusions of energy to the big club. Well, first of all, a guy who did just go up is Denzel Clark. How do you think Denzel is going to fare? What type of player is he? I saw he's had a couple of good moments the other night. He had a bunch of whiffs. How's he going to adjust to the jump up?
Well, I mean, the adjustment is going to be the big question for Denzel. He is as athletic and rangy and twitchy a player athletically as you will ever see. I mean, his mom was an Olympic heptathlete for Team Canada back in the 90s, and he's got as much athleticism in the family as well. He's cousins with the Nailers, Josh and Bo and Miles, who are all, you know, pro ball players, with Miles being the only one that's still in the minor leagues. For Clark, he has struggled offensively since being called up. He's had a big league glove and big league legs on base paths really since he was in high school, or maybe when he was at Cal State Northridge. But the problem for him is going to be bat to ball, making the adjustments when the pitchers adjust to him at the major league level. I think he's going to be just fine. It's just going to be a matter of, like a basketball player, kind of seeing one go through the hoop before he really gets his confidence up.
Matt Neverett is with us, voice of baseball in Las Vegas, calls the Hustle and Rebel games, also the Aviators games. All right, the big squad, man, the slide recently has just been real rough. We talked late last week about the bullpen How do they pull out of this? What do they need to just get pointed in the right direction? It's, you know, really solid start getting out to a high watermark, I think, of 20 and 16. It's just been rough.
Yeah, well, they tried to basically switch up the entire roster last week. I was on the road with the guys here in Las Vegas in Sugar Land right outside of Houston. And there was one day about a little less than an hour before first pitch. There were 10 individual roster moves made involving the Aviators, 5 position players going up and 5 new guys coming in. So they've tried to really infuse the big league team with a lot of talent and a lot of excitement. They just traded for Sean Newcomb yesterday, added him back. So it's his second stint with the Athletics. They're really trying everything they can. I think that slide kind of coincided with a rough stretch for Mason Miller. He had 2 losses and a blown save within a week as he tries to right the ship. And yeah, don't look now, but they're losing 8-0 in the second against Toronto last I checked. So we may be in for some more roster moves. Jacob Lopez, who started today on the hill, knocked around early by the Jays. And yeah, we may see him back here in Vegas in a week. That is the nature of the beast, though, as you guys know. Up and down they go, especially the pitchers, and even more so in this A's system recently.
Matt Never with us. What are you hearing about Kurtz?
Nothing serious, nothing that's going to cause him to miss a lot of time. I would actually kind of be surprised if he needs to make a major league rehab assignment with the Aviators. You know, he'd be welcome, but I think it'd be a pleasant surprise if he does so. It's a, you know, kind of a hip flexor type of thing. They were debating whether or not to put him on the injured list at all. They had a day off, and then really late on that next day, they decided to make the move because they needed to get some guys, you know, who are going to be able to play over the next week. And because of that, we saw Drew Avens promoted, and it's his major league debut, a guy who has earned it, your minor league grinder. He played 4 full seasons with Oklahoma City, the Dodgers' top farm club, before coming to the A's as a minor league free agent this year. And he was fresh off the heels of a 24-game hitting streak when he was called up, the second longest in the history of the Las Vegas team. So, you know, it's kind of a serendipitous fortune for Jones. And I think we see Kurtz back there pretty soon. They need his bat in the lineup, to be sure.
Well, you know, all in all, Kurtz not off to a horrible start. The 36 Ks and 94 bats is not optimal, but 245, 5 homers, 15 ribs, had a game with a couple of dongs in there. I expect him, you know, if he does come back and he can play the rest of the season and, you know, untouched by injuries, he should have a pretty monstrous rookie season, which brings us to, and I don't know even know if you've had a chance to see this guy. You call a lot of baseball games, not only AAA, but what do you know about the Royals prospect, Jack Caglione, who is at like 325. I think he's got 15 bombs, 44 ribs, very much in that same mold as Kurtz. Bigger, but a guy drafted, what, 6th versus 4th for Kurtz. And, I mean, he's a monster. He's 6'5 and 250. I would assume he's going to arrive soon.
He's got to. And, I mean, when he got called up to AAA Omaha, they were actually playing at Salt Lake in an interleague series against a PCL foe, so I was able to kind of keep tabs on that one, and it felt like, you know, every time I checked the score, boom, another Caglione home run. The other thing, too, imagine if the Royals let him pitch as well as hit. He was drafted as a two-way player out of Florida, and he was an absolute animal there that has translated into pro ball, and, you know, certain books are already offering odds on him to win AL Rookie of the Year. I don't think it's the worst bet. It's definitely not the best, but the fact that they're offering those odds already tells you something. He's a guy that I think physically is ready to go, even more so than Nick Kurtz. Kurtz can get a little bit bigger. I think this is about as big as we'll see from Caglione, and if that's the case, he's going to be just fine. And like you said, Cofield, I think he'll be up very, very soon, making an impact in the middle of that KC lineup.
And this is a little, you know, too hardcore, but we'll mention, you know, for the last, whatever, 10, 15 years, you'd have a lot of clubs that would just say, hey, you know what, we got to manipulate service time. He's not coming up to until a certain point. We're not going to lose a full year, have to pay him salary, a bigger salary on the back end. But baseball did change some things with Rookie of the Year, where if someone comes up and has success with Rookie of the Year, they come up early, that, you know, there could be a pick available, some things that maybe would keep the Royals from keeping him down for like 2 months and just going, hey, you know what? He's ready. We need the help. We're good. We need power. Let's go.
Yeah, and they made some adjustments before this most recent collective bargaining agreement, which that's, you know, the elephant in the room that isn't being talked about as much around baseball in the upcoming offseason is the CBA discussion that's going to be had between the players' union and the league. I think it's going to be a bloodbath, and I think we may even see a brief pause to spring training with the kind of lockout expected. I think I would be surprised if the negotiations went smooth, but I would say from the players' perspective, one of the best things that they were able to get worked into the new CBA, like you said, those incentives for clubs bringing guys up and having early success, and because of that, we're seeing a lot more players get bumped up soon. And I think really the guy that spearheaded it back in the day was Chris Bryant, the Las Vegas native, when the Cubs very, very obviously manipulated his service time in that 2016 season. Lo and behold, you know, he leads him to a World Series and wins Rookie of the Year. And then things kind of changed following that. So I think that that was kind of the impetus for a lot of the change. And we're seeing guys, you know, not only around baseball, but specifically in the A's organization. I'm really thinking about Jake Wilson and about Nick Kurtz this year. Really two guys that rocketed through the org and have a real chance to be in the big leagues for a long time with the A's, no matter where they're playing.
Latest power rankings I've seen from ESPN, and we're talking about Neverett, voice of baseball in Las Vegas, calls the Aviators games, also a voice of UNLV, football and basketball and baseball. Latest power rankings, Phillies 1, Detroit 2, Dodgers 3, Yankees 4, Cubs 5. Do you have an issue with that?
Not necessarily. I don't know if I would put Detroit quite as high. I don't want to call them a paper tiger necessarily, but they're being carried on the shoulders of the reigning Cy Young winner, Tarek Skubal. I think the Cubs should be a little bit higher as baseball's highest scoring team. And I think with Kyle Tucker in a contract year and a lot of the other pieces that they surrounded him with this year in that contract, they're going to have an opportunity to continue that offense, especially as it heats up at Wrigley Field and the wind continues to blow out throughout the rest of the summer. I don't really necessarily have an issue with those top five teams. I probably drop Detroit a little bit. Their ancillary stats aren't quite as good. They only have 20 stolen bases as a team this year, by far the least in Major League Baseball. And I think I'd bump the Cubs up a spot or two just because of their awesome offense so far.
Next six. See if there's a team in here where you're like, eh, you know what, they should be a little higher. Mets, Padres, Seattle, Giants, Cardinals, Twins. You know what, I didn't keep looking at the list. Astros are next. Where the hell are the Braves? Diamondbacks, Guardian, Braves 15. Okay, I know the record's only 25 and 28, but give me a break.
And they're going to get healthy. They're going to have their guys produce. Remember, they just got Ronald Acuna Jr. back last week, and he made an immediate impact. And that's obviously something that I think is going to continue. I think they'll continue to rise. I think the Giants are going to continue to rise up those power rankings as well. Coming into this week, they had the number one bullpen earned run average in Major League Baseball. And as we've seen time in and time out, year after year after year, the best teams come the end of the season and in the postseason are those with a strong bullpen. I think they're going to be able to make a move at the deadline as well and rocket up those power rankings.
Matt, great job. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll be listening, and I appreciate a couple minutes talking some baseball here on a Thursday.
Absolutely, yeah. With the Dodgers AAA team in town and all the injuries that they have, you're basically getting a Dodgers team. So come on out, aviatorslv.com for tickets and more info.
Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely, anytime.
Yep, Matt Spott brought to you by Jackson's Bar and Grill. Top value steak in Las Vegas, Jackson Bar and Grill, 6020 West Flamingo, $20 for the one-pound ribeye, $20 for the garlic marinated bistro filet. $20, and you get a great steak. You get the side of the – actually, no, you get veggies, and you get your choice of seven sides. That's awesome. And they got the full menu. If you don't want a steak, you can get a burger, wings, tacos, fingers, a loaded turkey wrap, anything you want. Great breakfast, 24-7, perfect spot, especially value spot. If you're going down to the Strip, it's right there at Flamingo and Jones. You can check in there before, you check in after. Flamingo and Jones, Jackson's Bar and Grill. On the way back, a little more baseball. We'll talk about that kid, Jack Caglione, 6'5", 250. He's got 15 bombs. Looks like the next like classic mega build power hitter in the NFL. But more important than that, the Chiefs, they had a great regular season record-wise. It was a weird regular season. Then the Super Bowl was a nightmare. The O-line didn't look good. They moved on Joe Tooney. We'll check in with OTAs in Kansas City with Soren Petro from WHB on where the Chiefs are right now, but especially on that O-line.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company in the 5 o'clock hour. Soren Petro checks in as I wanted to get in a bunch of Kansas City, and Missouri news. And I wanted to start off with the Chiefs and the offseason and Soren, first of all, buddy, how you doing? You all right after the Chiefs Super Bowl loss?
I'm finally getting over it, Steve. Thanks. Thanks for checking. I appreciate you getting right to me and making sure I'm okay. Sure. We're making it through.
Voluntary OTAs. Everyone looks around like Myles Garrett is not the Browns OTA, so some people are making a big deal of it. Are there any no-shows, anyone of high profile not there at the OTAs for the Chiefs?
Oh, sure. Chris Jones never comes. He shows up for the mandatory mini camp, and that's it. So, you know, that's something you expect. It's just what you know is going to happen with Chris Jones, and so nobody gets upset about it. For the most part, the Chiefs have very good attendance, but, you know, Chris Jones has brought it every year. Now, his sack total was down a little bit last year. Maybe some people will scratch their heads. But, yeah, Chris Jones is a regular that doesn't show up, and I think that's one of those positions that you don't. This is largely a passing camp and a pass coverage camp. I mean, if you can't put the pads on, I almost, you know, I guess you want the lineman there to work out, but there's not a lot of technique that can be done. Because if you start getting too physical, then you get penalized for having too physical a practice. So this is the norm in Kansas City.
All right, so tell me, I was joking about the Super Bowl loss, but tell me what the dialogue's been like for the last 3 months after the Chiefs got whacked in the Super Bowl.
You know, it's been a lot like been there, done that. We've right. seen this with the loss to the Tampa Bay Bucks. And, you know, in that game, they got manhandled at the line of scrimmage. Brett Veach stopped Patrick Mahomes before he ever got off the field that day and said, we will get this offensive line fixed. They went out. They added Joe Tooney. They drafted Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. They traded for Orlando Brown. They completely overmade four-fifths of the offensive line. There hasn't been that kind of work, and there isn't a story of Brett Veach meeting Patrick Mahomes on the field, but you could see there was a problem, particularly on the left side of the offensive line. They did go ahead and decide to put the franchise tag on Trey Smith. That surprised some of us that they might just go ahead and let him walk because of the cost, maybe extend Joe Tooney out, bring his cap number down. That would have probably been the cheapest route. Instead, they went youth, which they always seem to do. They went with, getting Trey Smith under contract, trading Joe Tooney, getting the fourth-round pick. They're going to move Kingsley Suamatia, who failed miserably at left tackle. He's going to get first shot at left guard to replace Joe Tooney. And then they signed Jalen Moore, 2 years, $30 million from the 49ers, the backup left tackle to Trent Richardson. They liked what they saw. He's probably going to be the guy to get things started. And then they took a big risk drafting Josh Simmons, traded down from 31 to 32, and took what they felt, many people felt, was the best offensive lineman in this draft if he was healthy, but he's not. He's coming back from a patella tendon injury, which is far from an ACL. The success rate is much lower, so they liked where he was medically. They felt like he was ahead of the curve on where he should be, that he was working hard, and that he's going to come back at least close to what he was, and hopefully they finally solved the left tackle spot. But they did throw two things at it. They've got three other draft picks that they've made over the last couple of years that if Kingsley doesn't work out at left guard, that could be options there. But it's not a perennial Pro Bowler like Joe Tooney that they're filling in with, you know, one of these spots. They didn't make that kind of move. It's not Orlando Brown, a guy who'd been a starter for multiple years. It's still the biggest question mark for this team is that left side of the offensive line.
Checking in on the Chiefs, talking to us around Petro from WHB here on Cofield and Company. I like the way you put the Travis Kelce note about what kind of shape he's in. I was one of the people who tried to mention, and it's not sky is falling, but that Travis Kelce looked like he enjoyed his offseason last year. And at an older age, you can't get out of shape. Has he talked about that? Is he sort of dedicated to making sure that he's not playing himself into shape this time around?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I didn't think he looked like he was in very good shape by football shape. Like, you know, there's talk show host shape.
Right.
He was fantastic. You know?
Outrageously good.
Beach bod, ready to rock, right? Sure. But then there's football shape. And to your point, there's like football trying to play into your late 30s, which, you know, you need to be in the absolute best physical condition. Even if you're a naturally gifted guy, which he is for his position, you need to be the best you can possibly be to play at a high level, and he wasn't. And he addressed it immediately. I think his first podcast he did with his brother afterwards, you know, once he had decided that he was going to come back, he said he was going to, or I think actually before he even said he was going to come back, he said if he does come back, then he has to dedicate himself to getting into the best shape of his life. So, you know, most people took that as an acknowledgement that he wasn't in the best shape of his life last year, that he was committed to doing it this year. You know, we saw some pictures where people were trying to say he looked like he was out of shape. And now the reports are that he's 20 pounds lighter this year than he was last year. We'll see. You know, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We'll see what he ultimately ends up looking like when they let him into practice. He's a guy that people question whether or not he's going to be there in the early parts of the OTA. So we'll see if we get a look at a new and improved physique.
It looks like Brittany Mahomes had a really big offseason. Has this been a hot topic?
No. No.
I mean, you know what? God love her.
Added another child to the family.
It was hotly debated. Was it having more children, or is it just time to get a lift, to get some improvement, make yourself happier? I'm all for it. She improved herself up top. Good for her.
Whatever works, you know, whatever. You do you, boo.
Yeah.
No, whatever makes you happy.
Well, speaking of massive pecs, let's get to the big prospect for the Royals, who is, what, 6'5 and 250, is built like a brick you-know-what house and is ripping up the minor leagues. How excited is Kansas City for Big Jack?
Very much so. First of all, Jack, J-A-C, right? And then Caglione, but spelled C-A-G-L-I-A-N-O-N-E. First N, silent. So that was fun getting to figure that out when they drafted him early in last year's draft. But, yeah, less than a year into the organization for a team that was in the playoffs last year until two nights ago, held a wild card spot. So they were still a playoff team and had the runner-up American League MVP, who had a season that was good enough to win it almost any year if Aaron Judge wasn't having a historic season. You wouldn't think the number one topic when talking about the baseball team would be a minor leaguer, but that's exactly what it was. And listen, we're not foreign to that. There's been so many bad years of Royals baseball that you didn't want to talk about anybody in Kansas City. So you were looking at guys in the minor leagues. You know, I'm wearing a Columbia Fireflies hat right now because of our passion for the minor leagues, because oftentimes that's what we're looking at, is the hope is down in the minor leagues. But this is pretty impressive because that's not what this is right now. They've got a historically good pitching staff. Their pitching has been, you know, fantastic. Noah Cameron has come up and stepped in for Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans, who went down. Noah Cameron is doing something. He's had four straight starts of six-plus innings with one run or less. Only one other player since the 1800s has ever done that in their debut. Steve Busby's the only Royal to come up and have their first four starts be quality starts. He threw two no-hitters before blowing out his arm. He was, if you look back, he was going to be one of the greats, but he blew out his arm. But, you know, that's some pretty impressive company. So not just from the five guys they planned on, which was kind of miraculous last year and how healthy they stayed, but then they've been able to supplement it with a guy who wasn't a top 100 prospect but has been fantastic. I don't think he's this good. He doesn't get the swing and miss, so he'll regress back, but he's a legitimate major league starting pitcher. The bullpen's been very good. They added Carlos Estevez to the back to allow Lucas Erceg to kind of be their fireman, and Matt Quatrero's used him brilliantly in that role. And so they have fantastic pitching. Their offense is a big problem. It's way down towards the bottom, and that adds to why, even though the big league club is very good, we're talking about Jack Caglione, because not only do chicks dig the long balls, guys dig the long balls. Home runs are impressive. You mentioned his size. He looks impressive at the plate. He's not just barely getting him over the wall. He's hitting him 400-plus feet, an exit velocity of, I think, 122. On one of even his singles are like 111 miles per hour. He crushes the baseball, and it's exactly what this big league club needs. So a lot of time is spent talking about Jack Caglione. A lot of fans are wondering why he's not already here. Five home runs in his first six games in the big leagues. Five home runs in 4 days in his first six games, in AAA, because they just made that move from AA to AAA. That was enough for the fans to think he ought to be here. I think he'll be here sooner rather than later, but it's impressive what he's done to this point. A couple of months into his minor league career, so I don't think anybody was questioning why he wasn't on the club to start, even at a stretch where he wasn't hitting very well down at AA. And so it looked like, hey, the timeline was appropriate. Now he's red hot. And I'll point out his OPS was lower than the kid the A's called up already this year, and he's had his struggles, right? So most people are saying that the jump, because of the cut in minor league teams, the jump from AAA to the big leagues has never been a bigger jump. And it's you know, you need to be careful about just looking at some AAA numbers and saying, okay, he's ready. His first game this week, 0-for-5 with three strikeouts, right? Last night, three hits. So, you know, he is on the brink of being ready. I don't think they're trying to manipulate it. J.J. Pecola said, look, we're aware of what those are. Number one, they'd like him to win Rookie of the Year. Can they do that? Because that puts him – they get a draft pick for that. They'd like him to be top three in the MVP at some point. So they want to make sure that he is, you know, eligible for those kind of things. He said, look, those dates are – we're aware of them. but it's not going to dictate what we're going to do. When he's ready, he'll be up. We're in a pennant race. That's the number one thing. And so I think he'll be up. I think he'll end up earning his rookie of the year, his rookie season this year. So if he's going to win that award, it's going to need to come this year. And it'll get the clock started on him finishing, top three in the MVP to try to get a draft pick, which they got from Bobby Witt Jr. finishing second last year.
It's Ryan Petro with us talking a little baseball, WHB in Kansas City. And by the way, your TV coverage, what's going on there? I saw you flipping out that you were missing at bats, and like, what's happening with a lot of these smaller markets? Because by the way, we're getting the A's, you know that. I can only expect what the TV package is going to be like and what weird, branded TV network we're going to get. Are you getting bad TV coverage of the Royals where you can't watch, is it's going in and out?
Well, they've got the, fight going on where only one cable system, I think like DirecTV and Spectrum carry the Royals. None of the others have. If you have YouTube TV, you don't get the Royals. And so what you have to do is subscribe to the FanDuel. It's now been branded. It's Sinclair Broadcasting. It used to be Bally Sports Network. Now it's FanDuel Sports Network, and Bally's nor FanDuel deserve any grief for this. They're just buying the naming rights and putting their name, although you quite like, do you want to be involved with a product that struggles? But Sinclair Broadcasting filed for bankruptcy. Right. They were the ones that bought all the Fox regionals and had to divvy it up. They were too big, or ESPN bought them all up and had to sell them off. And they were the ones that bought them from ESPN. And the amount paid was way more than even their company was worth at that time. I mean, we talked about it. I'm like, there's no way this is going to work. And it didn't. They've lost the rights to the Suns and the Pelicans and, teams all over the place. And a lot of the baseball teams, the hope was that Major League Baseball was going to take over and distribute the rights. The Royals ended up, as they filed for bankruptcy, dropped, which then protected them from having to pay their contract. The Royals then went back and signed a new contract with them, presumably for less money that they thought they could make money on. And so if you have the app, they apparently haven't sold the commercials. And so where you don't have commercials, you just have a "we'll be right back" logo up there. And then, playing so much so that when a commercial comes on during the game and my wife happens to walk by, she stops and goes, "What the hell is on the TV? What is going on there? What is that?" And it's ridiculous. Like, find something, to cover up the commercial spots other than just four cords.
Yes.
And it honestly, it looks like there's like spores in the air. It's like these dots, it's like some, the zombie apocalypse is coming if you breathe these. Like, I can't even tell what they're trying to accomplish with the video. And then this just annoying ass sound that they play during the commercials. And so, yes, you're a Royals fan. You're paying, I think it's 15 a month, 30 a month. I can't remember what it is. It's a big number to get and you also get the Thunder and Nuggets, I think, the Avalanche as well. On this subscription, maybe the Blues are in that mix as well. So you get a couple other teams as part of it, but you're really just, you're a Kansas City fan, you're buying the Royals, and they make it just as annoying as possible. And you would think at some point, if you're going to sign a deal, you would say, don't piss our viewers off. And so, yeah, it's clearly temporary. I think the hope is that baseball will run these things. That's what John Sherman, I've talked to him, the Royals owner, a number of times in spring training about it. That's his hope as to where this is going, is a centralized, NFL Sunday ticket style baseball package that's available for all fans, that you don't just buy your team, you buy all the teams. But I've been hearing about that for several years now, so I grow less optimistic by the day.
So my audience here in Vegas, last week I was ranting about the Rockies for 3 days about how pathetic they are and the health of baseball. And I'm sure a lot are like, why are you talking about the Rockies? And this is another example. Vegas and Nevada are investing in this sport.
Yes.
We're spending $380 million to get in, plus infrastructure and roads is probably going to go another $500 million. This is what we're investing in. This is concerning. Does Rob Manfred, and does he know what the hell he's doing?
And let me be clear. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. You are investing in baseball, and you're not investing in baseball once as you get ready with your stadium, because, in 2006, the Royals and the Chiefs renovated their stadiums, and now they're ready for more. And the Royals are going to leave Kauffman Stadium. And, one of the biggest breaking stories I had yesterday was that the Royals have basically bought the debt on some area of land on the Kansas side that if the current company doesn't make their payments, which they're struggling to do right now. The Royals can foreclose on it, and then they can build that stadium there. And by the way, it's in an area that nobody in that area wants it, right? You do have Kansas and Missouri fighting over, you know, Missouri definitely wants to keep the teams. Kansas wants the teams. And so we talk about bonds. But my point, like, that's all, you guys have been through the stadium thing, but there's always this idea, and you're probably getting pretty close to hearing about this on your football stadium. This is what you haven't done yet, is that they're going to say, like, well, now we need $600 million in renovations. Like, the tax never ends. Like, this is a tax that you begin and you will pay, because we are just 20 years removed from passing the renovations, and now they want a new baseball stadium and either a new football stadium or more renovations in the billion range to the football stadium. You are always paying. Now, I can also tell you that St. Louis lost football. No one is in their dome downtown, and the word is that downtown St. Louis is falling apart and that no one goes downtown anymore. And the Cardinals aren't winning. That doesn't help either. And so do you want to be a football town? Do you want to be an NFL city? Do you want to be an MLB city? There's a cost. And when you're the market size, Kansas City and Vegas are very comparable size cities. Vegas is growing a lot faster, but it is, you know, we've got more regional areas to draw from than the desert provides, you know, more farming communities and towns to draw from. But Vegas is growing, but the cost never ends. You're not just building a building and then we're all done with it. You're going to have costs that comes up and constantly be putting money into a new stadium and then turning around and building yet another stadium on down the road.
Saran Petros with Cofield and Company, WHB in Kansas City. Another important issue to get to, where the cost never ends, and I'll bring it home to Nevada. The cost for taxpayers to subsidize the keeping up with the Joneses for Nevada and UNLV athletics, that never stops, because we are not part of the haves, which I find this whole thing with Greg Sankey, mouth of the South, as I've been calling him, Jefferson Davis Sankey, this whole thing with his SEC grift and takeover and let's grab all this money we can, this now starts to go to state-level politics for me. I don't think anyone else, or very few people, are recognizing this, and I think you guys are a flashpoint with Missouri in the SEC, part of the haves, and Sankey saying basically F off to the Big 12 with Kansas and Kansas State. You're telling me this isn't going to become an issue between these two states and Kansas politicians and public servants shouldn't be stepping up and going, hey, where is this shortfall going to be made up, because we're arbitrarily not in the haves?
Yeah, no, I look, and when the colleges are screaming for the government to get involved because they want to be able to basically break antitrust laws, to monopolize things, to put rules on limiting a person's salary, which, let's be clear, you know, that's what they've asked for. They've said, well, look, we know we've lost in court, that it's against the law for us to not pay these people while making a bunch of money off of them. That they have a right to be paid and to be paid as much as the market. You know, are you a capitalist or not? Then they should be able to be paid as much as they want. And I'll be honest with you, for the same reason that Major League Baseball, the young guys, the guys that won't be there for the ever see free agency, go ahead and hold, you know, strike and do those things to get bigger salaries on the top end, is basically trickle down economics, that they will bring the bottom up as well. Whatever you do, would you like to be told you're a plumber and you can only make this much because you're just a plumber, right? Like, you know, well, these aren't pro athletes. These are college athletes. They should only be able to make this much. That is a precedent you do not want to start. Yet that's what the colleges have asked for. By the way, college is sitting on billions and billions of dollars in you know, I forget the word for it, but their endowments. And yet they raise the cost of education for average people who aren't getting scholarships, and they don't want to give any of the money back, and they want the government involved, but then they want to make all the rules on everything else and don't want the government there. Oh, no, no, no. We want to guarantee that we're going to have four SEC teams so we can have our own tournament and have our own television deal for the SEC tournament for those four seats. Like, never mind that it's not necessarily going to be the four best SEC teams. Maybe we do an NBA play-in thing, and the 11th best SEC team ends up getting one of those slots. So suck on that. You think you're getting this big playoff, but instead you're going to watch this ass 7-5 SEC team that got hot at the right time get in there, and you're stuck with it. That's why they want to guarantee those spots. We get four every year. What's the big deal? Because the big deal is you won't put your four best in. You'll make more money on the side, which doesn't come to us, even though it's the tournament that is what ultimately is the prize in playing those games. You want to go play those games as bowl games? Nobody watches. But they know having the carrot of those games mattering for a tournament, they'll get bigger ratings for that than they will get for you know, going to play in the Liberty Bowl, right? And so they want to create more revenue stream. And it's up, I think, to the government to say, listen, all you state universities, for sure, we're already giving you state money, right? You have an obligation. And if we're going to give you state money and they give a bunch of federal money, if we're going to give you federal money as well, then this has to be something that's good for the consumer, right? Like, you're going to run it like a business. Let's treat it like a business. It's a monopoly. This is a monopoly, and monopolies are not allowed in this country. So, yes, I do think when your taxes are going to pay the state universities, to fund the state universities, and they can be like, well, it's not the athletic department. That goes to the education department. My ass. And they'll tell you about how the athletic department's a separate company. It's a nonprofit that we run at a break even. Well, then why do you have $40 million in donations? Right, $110 million budget on Kansas a couple of years ago. There were over $40 million of that budget that were donations. If you're donating from your fan base, your alumni, you're not running a nonprofit. You are running something that is a loss and drawing even more money from people. Take that money and put it into your education and give the money back to the taxpayers. Yes, it absolutely. They have asked for the government to get involved. The government should get involved, but not with what they want. It should get involved with the big picture of what's going on with not only college athletics, but academics and the cost of education as a whole.
Petro, great job, buddy. We'll talk to you.
Always my pleasure, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Soren Petro thought that was going to be about a minute answer. Turned out to be longer. These are serious issues, especially on the education front, and just so folks know, Mr. Petro has a daughter heading off to college soon. So this is like when it really starts to hit, you're like, how much does this cost? And what's going on with conferences and supporting athletics? And you need state funds on the way back. Just to, again, this is mostly fun and games. I love college football. I don't want to see it turn into multiple leagues where there's a big league and then a lesser league. And that's what the SEC wants. I'm going to get to some guys who actually work for conferences, and I am going to punch down, right? And what I mean by punch down is I'm going to take the bait on someone. I think talking trash, I don't think they realize what they're doing. They think it's all fun and games. And hey, jackass, you're going to be in freaking the hornet's nest here in a couple of years. That's all I'm going to say. I will address it on the way back.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
So on this show, we use the term, very proud of, Griffin's here, it's Cofield, Grab Bag. We use the term, don't punch down. And punch down is not, hey, you're less important than us. Sometimes people are obviously trolling and trying to get you. Originally, it really is a kind of an internet reference. You know, we're posting a bunch of TikTok videos and someone puts something up, you know, trying to, you know, get you worked up. And I'm just like, lighten up, buttercup, you know, calm down. And I can see what the SEC is doing here. We're getting good talk out of it. And I think we do need to talk about an SEC takeover of college football, because as I mentioned a lot, we're talking education and state funds and state schools, and what they're trying to do is really nonsense, and there needs to be a pushback on the mouth of the South, Greg Sankey. And I can see this week they've had this orchestrated plan to get stuff out. One, take advantage of a slower time in college football, but I think they're really sending out test balloons to see how worked up people are going to get about it. And Greg Sankey basically kind of establishing himself as, hey, you know what, the SEC rules, we want more and more and more, and if you don't like it, we're just going to take it and move on with our ball and start it on our own. His playoff plan with four auto bids for both the SEC and the Big Ten sucks. It stifles competition. It's not fair to the kids. I'll leave it at that. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN writer who covers the Big Ten, said, worth saying, no league dominates the media discussion like the SEC. A whole week of media at spring meetings, while the Big Ten did none at its meetings last week. Smart on the SEC's part, and he says, you know, especially coming off of a season where the league was objectively a bit down. So Rittenberg is a writer. He covers the Big Ten. Pete Burns is a broadcaster, radio host, who works for the SEC network. And I've seen him kind of amp up his rhetoric. Now, when I say punch down, I think he's trolling, and I think he may even be friends with Rittenberg. But he sent something out a little earlier, and it's getting a lot of response. He said, the Big Ten is quiet because they understand over half the league is hot garbage and only prop up a small amount of true quality contenders they have. So, again, if this is a bit, okay, if you got a little thing with Rittenberg, that's fine. I will mention again, the grand plan here is, I think, the SEC and Big Ten moving away from the rest of college football. And guess who's going to be broadcasting both the SEC and the Big Ten? Probably Pete Burns. The constant shilling, the bit he's playing, I think is going to be counterproductive down the road. He's also a guy who cut his teeth in media in Denver. But now he's a good old Southern boy. Now, he grew up. I don't know where he grew up. I know he was born in Baton Rouge. But I warn media people from getting involved in the bit. Working for the SEC network is not a lifetime appointment.
No.
And you hurt your credibility by playing these games. Like we mentioned, hey, if you want to do it, you know, Joe Tessitore, veteran announcer, signed on to do post-fight with WrestleMania, and he was like wrestling character guy. He was like fully bought in, and I'm like, okay, it's a little bit weird. Hey, do what you have to do to make your money, and that's cool. But in the case of this guy Burns, I'm like, I don't get what you're doing. I don't think it's funny. I'm not going to sit here and argue on behalf of the Big Ten. I think there are positives to the Big Ten, like they actually educate most of their students. I don't think the SEC education is first and foremost. But this is really interesting what's developing here this offseason with the SEC trying to kind of flex its muscle and basically threaten everyone, like, hey, we're going to do what we want to do. I thought what Soren Petro said about 10 minutes ago, and it's something we didn't even address, is the reason that four auto bids are desired by the SEC and maybe even the Big Ten is that they're going to do a play-in element for spots 3 and 4. So their claim that they want four of their best teams in could be hogwash because they're probably going to do like a 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5 to get the third and fourth spot, which then kind of goes against, hey, we want the best teams in. This is just a friggin' money grab. What are you doing? And I'll go back one more time to Pete. Like, you're playing into this SEC grift. It's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. No, it's just a lot of nonsense. And it's also scary. It's, for me as a college football fan, it's scary. I understand the SEC has had its dominance. It's had its time. But you're talking the things they're talking
it's Griffin, to cut you off. I'm sorry.
No,
it's nonsense. You went to Utah. Utah has a great football program.
Oh, yeah.
What it's going to cut out a lot, and this is why public servants, especially in the Mountain Time Zone and the Pacific Time Zone, need to start stepping up and going, what are you doing? This is a monopoly. And start threatening the antitrust and go, if you want a monopoly, okay, there's going to be some serious repercussions here. I counted 17 states that could be shut out or will have a situation where one school is in this big 40 or 50 and one school is out. And that's going to start a friggin' war. And again, we go to the funding thing. Go in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Do you have the McAfee intro that we played yesterday? Can you play this again? And by the way, right now it's 50-36. Knicks looking good, up 14, 3 minutes left in the first half. This was McAfee in Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, Indiana. We got some big wigs from the big city in the building. Spike Lee is here. Ben Stiller is here. Timothy Chalamet is here. Let's send these sons of back to New York with their ears ringing. Let's turn this off.
Speaking of bits, that was fun. It was a bit. It was wrestling. Some people are just not in on the joke. I guess John Cougar Mellencamp is annoyed. He said, I was embarrassed when somebody under whose direction, I don't know. He doesn't know who McAfee is. There's an issue right there. Called out some of the people who made the trip from New York to support their team and in turn support our team. The audience booed these people. I'd say that was not Hoosier hospitality. I don't want to have to go on a rant about what Hoosier hospitality is sometimes, and I'm good for John Cougar Mellencamp that he's proud of the state of Indiana, that he doesn't get the bit. It was a bit. It's supposed to be funny. By the way, Ben Stiller had some stuff to say. We'll have to address Ben tomorrow. Ben, lighten up, you're a comedian. This was a comedic bit.
Yeah, it's McAfee. It's McAfee's brand. Be outrageous, act like a sports fan in sports media, and get people riled up. And also, it's sports culture.
Yes.
It's aggressive. It's not always fun all the time, Steve. It's going to be a little dirty.
And there are a lot of people in Indiana and Indianapolis who don't like New York. They don't like the celebrities. That's their thing, man.